Welcome back to the Make or Break Show, where each week we bring you stories of incredible makers and the make or break moments that have defined them along the way. I'm your host, Brandon Cullum, and this week we chat with Johnny Lambert, aka Johnny Builds. We get into his quick rise on YouTube. There's some stunning builds, including a custom axe with a scorpion in the handle that's gotten over 7 million views. What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the show. Another fun one, as always, for you this week. We're hanging out with Johnny Lambert, the one and only Johnny Builds. Before we get into this episode, as always, I want to thank all the wonderful supporters over on Patreon. This is episode 101, which is wild. I was going through the list the other day, and it was just insane the amount of people that have been on the show that have been really gracious with their time and letting me chat with them and ask them all kinds of random questions. And then thank you guys so much for listening to those episodes. And so I love that maybe this is your very first one, or you've been around for a while. Thank you so much for supporting and for listening to the show. This thing is it's so much fun to do on a weekly basis. It's probably my most consistent thing that I do right now. And it's fun just to connect with lots of cool people in our maker community. And I want to give a special thank you to the wonderful supporters over on Patreon. If you guys would like to support the show on a more financial side of things, you can head over to patreon.com/makeorbreakshow. You help get a show out every single week with some of the hosting costs and some of the editing costs over on my end. And I'm going to give a shout out actually to all of them. So thank you so much to the shop class, Wheels and Things, Stian Sorhus, Making at Home, Steve Mosley, Winston Moy, Jedediah Schultz, and JW Craftsman. Thank you so much, everybody. All right, so getting into this week's episode, like I said, we're hanging out with Johnny Builds. I've seen Johnny's stuff for a while, and we actually get into it a little bit when we're talking about the YouTube content creators, which I know we've had a lot on, and we'll be having some folks that maybe aren't specifically YouTube folks in the future as well. But we've kind of seen different kind of classes of people, so like your graduation class, quote unquote. So you kind of have the originals, the old school guys like the Jimmy Durestes and the Bob Claggetts and the David Picciutos, all the folks who are making it. And then kind of that next level folks, maybe the Ben Uedas, even though he's been around for a while, but Mike Montgomery's, the Four Eyes Furniture, the people that have been on for a little bit now. And then Johnny is kind of part of this new class that is not just starting. So he's been around for a little over a year, but he is doing really, really, really well. So I put Johnny as well as Mudestrial Maker on. I've had him on the podcast as well. But Johnny has really blown up here, especially recently. We'll get into that and why, but specifically the project that I saw pop up, and I was like, man, I really need to bring him on the show, was he did this really cool bike cabinet. So his actual road bike is sitting in the back of this cabinet, and it's got gear spokes for the drawers or for the door pulls. It just looks really, really cool. And then I was digging into some more of his projects. I'm like, man, this guy's killing it. And then about a month ago now, or about 3 weeks ago now, at the time of this recording, he put out a video where he made a custom axe from a cheap Amazon axe. He redid the handle, and he put a scorpion in epoxy at the very end of it, which is a pretty crazy project. But what's even crazier is it has gotten over 7 million views on YouTube, which is a ton. Even if you are one of the old school granddaddies like the Jimmy Durestes, 7 million is a crap ton. And so we get into kind of what it's like in the middle of a viral success, and then how he's consistently putting out videos. And one thing you're going to also like about Johnny, he is not doing this full time. He has a full time job. So he's doing this on the side and kind of building it up to be able to transition actually when he retires from the police service. So this is fun, and you guys are going to enjoy Johnny. He's a great guy. So without further ado, let's jump to our interview with Johnny Builds. All right, guys, welcome back to the Make or Break Show. We're hanging out with Johnny Lambert today, calling in from OKC. Thank you so much for jumping on, chatting with us. Looking forward to getting into your woodworking, your making, and all the crazy stuff you've been doing.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, totally. So I've been wanting to have you on for a while, and this seems like it's pretty appropriate because it seems like your scorpion build has been seen by just a few people out there. And for people that don't know, I mean, it's over what, 7 million now, and it came out just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, today is the third week, and it hit 7 million today, and it's
insane.
It's ridiculous. That's a weird video. Like it's
because to give people context if they're not like familiar with your stuff. So even if like Bob Claggett was getting 7 million, he would be real happy. But I mean, you have a big channel, but definitely not like millions of people on it.
No.
And I remember sending you a message because when I definitely wanted to have you on, and when you had your bike dresser end table, I forget what do you call that?
Bike cabinet is kind of what I call it.
Bike cabinet. Okay.
I don't know if that's what it actually is, but sounds good.
Because I saw that. I was like, this is super cool. And so I was like, I definitely need to have him on to chat about this. But then, yeah, that the hammer came out, the hatchet, and it was just wild. But
yeah,
that's crazy. So we're going to get into all of that. But to go way back into your background, was making part of your childhood growing up woodworking, that kind of stuff? Did your dad do it?
Not even a little bit. Yeah.
Okay.
This is all very, very new.
What were you into as a kid?
You know, just normal kid stuff, you know, like building forts and playing with Legos. And not that I was like some Lego aficionado, but just like a normal kid playing with Legos. And I was real into like Star Wars and Transformers and stuff like that. But nothing like really that had any glimpse of what my passions are now.
Like what kind of group did you hang with in high school?
Oh, I was a total nerd, man.
Okay, really?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I was a total geek.
That is surprising from seeing your stuff now. Like, I wouldn't have pegged you as a nerd.
Well, thank you.
Not that a nerd is bad. I'm literally here wearing a Star Wars shirt.
I have a couple of those myself. You know, excuse me. We moved around a lot when I was a kid. So I was very introverted because, you know, it wasn't until high school that I went to a school more than 2 years in a row. So, my dad was in the army and, we bounced around a whole bunch. And so I like making friends and like keeping friends was hard for me. So I was very quiet, introverted, shy. And I think all of this personality and the person that I am now is because of what I do for a living. You kind of have to get out of that to do what I do. So
did you go to school for criminal justice? Is that how you got into it?
No. I literally 2 weeks after I graduated high school, I was in San Diego in Marine Corps boot camp. Like,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I knew when I was a sophomore in high school that I wanted to be a Marine. And like once I made that decision, like that was what I was going to do and I couldn't wait to do it. So yeah, like I was immediately in the Marine Corps and did that for 4 years.
Where did you serve?
I went to boot camp in San Diego and then I went to the opposite coast. I went to North Carolina and I loaded bombs on Harrier jets, the jets that can like take off vertically and land vertically. Yeah, that was my job.
That's crazy. So were you, were you out at sea?
Yeah, I did. I actually did two deployments and all of this was like pre 9/11. So it was a different ball game back then. I actually got out in May of 2001. So I missed all of that.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, it was a different ball game back then. Like I can't imagine, you know, what it's like now because, it was completely different. It was like a 6 month vacation. Just the accommodations weren't great. You know, you're living on a, on a Navy ship in a, you know, a berthing area with 300 other smelly dudes. And, but we went to some really cool places. Like I was actually born in Europe. I was born in Belgium and, my dad, you know, when he was stationed there when he was in the army, but, so when I was in the Marine Corps, I got to go all over most of like Mediterranean coast. So I've been all over Spain, Italy. I've been to Crete. I've been to Israel, and got to see a lot of really, really cool stuff. Like I really enjoyed my time in the Marine Corps because of those deployments.
Did you have a favorite place?
Oh man. Israel was amazing. It's a beautiful, interesting country. Crete was kind of the same thing. Just crazy, beautiful, really, really interesting, friendly people. But probably my favorite was Croatia. And this was back in like 99. And they were just kind of pulling out of their, I think it was like a civil war that they had there for a while. So it wasn't really known at the time for being a tourist destination. So they told us like, hey, we're going to Croatia tomorrow. And we're like, what? You know, isn't that like a war-torn country? And so you have these, like, you don't know what to expect. And then we show up and it was, they film a lot of Game of Thrones there. And we went to this place called Dubrovnik, and it was like this old, like medieval looking city, sitting on these cliffs of the Adriatic Sea, like the most picturesque place I've ever been, the nicest people, that I've met in Europe. It was, I mean, cobblestone streets. I think a lot of Game of Thrones was filmed in Dubrovnik where we were, and it was it was crazy. Like of all the places that I went when I was in Europe, that's the one place I'm like, I have to go back there.
Yeah. Have you been back?
No, I'm too busy now.
were you guys there just to visit, or were you there like on deployment?
We were on deployment. We were, basically they call it the Marine Expeditionary Unit. So it's like an aircraft carrier, but it's like a smaller aircraft carrier. And it would carry like 6 Harrier jets and like 20 helicopters and 3,000 infantry. So basically it's what you imagine whenever like the Marines roll up on a beach and they just like bring it with all their forces. That's what we were. We were like this forward deployed beach landing assault force.
Oh, wow. And okay.
All the support that goes along with that. So back then it was always, you know, there was 2 of them deployed at all times. As soon as one came, was on their way back, the next one was heading out to relieve it. I don't know what it is now because it's been so long since I've been in.
Yeah.
But there was always one in like the Mediterranean and one over in like the Pacific.
Gotcha. Yeah. Was there a lot of like mechanical work? Like, were you fixing, building things then, or was it more kind of stuff?
Actually, it was a ton of mechanical stuff. So that's kind of where I learned how to work with a lot of tools. You know, I used to joke back then, like I could work on this $35 million aircraft, but you know, all I could do on my car was like change the oil. You know, I had no idea what I was doing under the hood of a car, but yeah, I was working on this high tech, you know, aircraft that could, you know, take off vertically and land vertically and loading, you know, these bombs and dealing with all the armament systems and doing mechanical work and avionics work and all this stuff. But that was my first introduction to kind of learning how to use tools, really.
Gotcha. So you were in the military, you said, for 4 years?
Yeah. Well, it's just like when you sign up, you know, you sign up for like a 4-year commitment.
And, oh, gotcha.
Yeah. And they really try hard to get you to stay in. But I was like, you know, I really enjoyed it, but I just knew I didn't want it to be my career. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do at the time, but I just knew that that wasn't it. I really loved it, but there was something else out there for me.
Did you have a leaning towards where you wanted to go, or like a general direction once you got out?
Only because it was what everyone else that got out wanted to do. I had never, I'm a police officer, and I had never really considered that as a career. I always really looked up to police officers. My dad was a high school principal. So he worked with like the school police officers quite a bit, and several of his friends were police officers. And I always really looked up to those guys. So I had a lot of respect for that. But it never dawned on me as being something that I wanted to make a career out of. But when I was getting out of the Marine Corps, you know, that's what a lot of guys, when they're building up to that in their last 6 months, you know, that's all they talk about is like, what are you going to do when you get out? Where are you going to go? What are you going to do? And everybody was going to be like a state trooper, state police, a cop here, a cop there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it kind of got me thinking, and I'm like, well, maybe I go back to Oklahoma City and apply for the police department. So that's what I did.
So did you live in Oklahoma City before?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. I went to high school here, and then went in the Marine Corps and then came back.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So did you go right into the police department once you got back?
It took me about a year to get hired. I worked in the county jail here in Oklahoma City. It was a horrible, terrible job. it was interesting at times.
Yeah.
You know, I got to see some pretty wild stuff working there. They barely paid us a living wage. So when I got hired, it was a big deal because it was a lot more money and it was like, oh, now I have a career.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you like a guard in the jail?
Or? I was. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. I mean, like what you see in the movies, like all the crazy stuff?
You know, so my job specifically was I was a medical security officer. And what that means is you guard the nurses, you walk around with them while they deliver meds to the inmates. So basically every morning my job was to take a nurse and go open like 300-400 doors while they, you know, gave them medication or whatever they needed and just provide security while they were doing that. And then the rest of the day was usually going to different cells, getting inmates out, taking them up to the medical floor, having them seen for whatever appointment they need to be seen, sitting with them, and then taking them back. So,
gotcha.
Because of that, because we kind of roved all over the jail, anytime that we weren't doing something like that, we were part of any sort of response that was needed. So if there's like a big fight in a pod, like we were some of the first ones to kind of run in there and handle that. So it was kind of wild. It was fun, but not enough fun to where it was worth the how little money they were paying us to do it.
Right.
Yeah. And it was nasty in there. It was the nastiest job I've ever had in my life.
Do you work for the city of Oklahoma City now? Like the city police department?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So did you come in? I have no idea how the police force, I can't even say the right word. Like would you come in as just an officer?
Yeah. So where I work, everyone starts as a patrol officer.
Patrol officer.
Let's say you retired from another police department in some other part of the country and you were highly ranked and you decided to move to Oklahoma City and you want to renew your career here. You start from the bottom as a patrol officer. And we all like we're in the black and white car answering calls, usually for at least your first 5 years.
Gotcha. So what year was that when you started?
Oh gosh. 2002. Yeah.
Oh, geez. 2002. Okay. So 17 years ish somewhere there.
Yeah. Not quite 17. I've got a little over 3 years before I can retire.
Oh, gotcha. Why have you stuck around so long? Like, why do you enjoy it?
Well, I mean, I stick around because at this point it's because I can't retire yet.
You're 3 years from retirement. Right. Right. Yeah, but was there something about it way back then that you kind of fell in love with?
Yeah. You know, I kind of joke cause I am at the point where, you know, I so look forward to the day that I can retire and do the Johnny Build stuff full time. I really am passionate about what I'm doing now and I love it. But I also do enjoy being a police officer and it's been a very rewarding 17 years. It's been absolutely insane at times. Some of the stuff I've experienced and seen and been exposed to. Some of it you're like, wow, that was awesome. And others you're like, holy crap, how am I going to sleep tonight? You know, and how am I going to get that thing out of my mind? But I wouldn't trade it. You know, I hope in my time I've made some sort of impact and I still feel good about it. I'm just at that point now where, this isn't the only thing that there is. There are other things in life than being a police officer. And kind of the thing that a lot of people I work with, the trap they fall into is you can maximize the most amount of money that you get if you work 35 years for the police department. That's the most amount of retirement, the most money you can walk away with, right? 35 years. That's a long time to work one job, you know?
Yeah.
And usually when they hit about 30, you know, you can kind of see that fatigue of doing this job for that long. And then to go another 5 years, like I don't want that to be me. And I kind of feel bad for those that feel like they have to do that. So no matter what, like I don't want to be afraid to just like take that leap to jump in and do the Johnny Builds thing full time, even though maybe it's going to be a little bit scary not having, you know, that guaranteed income and,
right,
you know, good insurance and all those things that come along with having, you know, a city government job like this. But I feel like it's important in situations like that when you feel the way I feel about doing the thing that I'm doing for, you know, like making stuff, like you got to follow those passions. So
yeah,
no matter what, like I've decided in a little over 3 years, I'm stepping away no matter what.
So you grew up a nerd, then you were in the military, and then you've been in the police force for a super long time. Where did making come back into your story or come into your story?
Well, so it's kind of hard to describe because I can't place like where that feeling came from, but there's always been kind of this creative desire within me, and I'm not an artist. I can't sing. I don't play an instrument, but I always had some sort of creative desire and I never really had an outlet for it. And about 3 years ago, I was kind of, you know, I'm a homeowner and, I wanted to kind of spruce up my house a little bit after living here for a couple of years. And I was just kind of, you know, you go to places like Target and look at the furniture they have for sale and all of it just looks so fake and cheap and none of it was exciting or new. So I started seeking that elsewhere. And the first thing I did was get on Amazon and start researching like books about building DIY furniture. Hmm. And I actually found the first thing that popped up was Ben Ueda's Homemade Modern book.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. And so I bought that. And through that book, I discovered, oh, this guy's got a YouTube channel too. So I started diving into all his videos. And then I started diving into all of Mike Montgomery's videos. And then from there, it just like snowballed, you know, because once you find those guys, you find everyone else, you know, Jimmy, right, and Bob and Pachuto and it just kind of grew from there. So my whole making journey has been, you know, learning from YouTube. I have no formal training whatsoever. I don't consider myself, you know, all that skilled of a woodworker. You know, yeah. I think that's kind of my thing is, a lot of times when I'm doing a project, it's me deciding that I want to do something. And then I just like kind of wing it and figure out how I'm going to do it. So I end up doing a lot of things for the first time. And then I show it in a video, you know, this is me doing this for the first time. And here's the mistakes that I made. And here's the things that went right. And I'm doing it from a mindset of no one's ever shown me really how to do this. I kind of figure stuff out on my own. So maybe I find a method of doing something that is unique and helpful, or maybe I do something that's like the absolute wrong and hardest way to do something, but I don't know. And I just kind of enjoy that whole process.
Yeah. So when was it that you got Ben's book? How long ago was that?
I think it's a little bit over 3 years. I bought his book. Okay. And on the cover of his book is, have you seen it?
I think I know the one you're talking about. I'm gonna look it up right now.
Yeah. So if you look at the very cover of his book, there's like a console and it's super simple, but it's super cool looking. It's just like a long rectangular box made out of, it's either 2x12s or 2x10s. I can't quite remember. It's right there in the next room in my living room on display where it's been since I built it. But it's super simple. It's just this rectangular box, just with exposed screws and then this really clever, like splayed iron pipe leg assembly that you build, which at the time I didn't realize it was like $300 worth of iron pipe, but
right.
Yeah. It was kind of an expensive build, but once I was in it, I'm like, okay, I'm committed. I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
And like I built it and I was like, well, that was awesome. Let me build something else. So I built a couple more of his projects. I built a couple of Mike Montgomery's projects. As a matter of fact, this bed that's right here beside me here in my bedroom, that's kind of derivative of one of his beds,
Cool.
Mike's beds. Yeah. So I did that for a while, just building their projects. And then from that was like, oh, well, what can I design and what can I do?
What made you have that turning point? Because I feel like a lot of people, well, not maybe people that I talk with on this show, but just kind of the DIYers in general, a lot of folks will kind of stick to the plans. But it's like, it feels like it's another step to be like, all right, I want to build this. I want it to look like this. Let me kind of reverse engineer to figure out how to make it. Like, was there a single project that did that for you? Or did you kind of just gradually kind of tweak designs until it was really your own thing?
Yeah. So actually, I think there was a single project, a group of projects. My daughter, for Christmas several years ago, I decided that I was going to completely make over her room. I was going to build her a bed. I was going to build her a nightstand, a desk, and a set of shelves. And I had to do that while she was in the living room watching television. I'm out in the garage, like making stuff and have to kind of hide it from her. It was a lot of like, I think the bed was like a shanty to chic, kid's bed.
Right.
And they had like extremely detailed, really good, build plans that were just free. I was like, how is this free?
Right.
And that was really, really where I kind of, grew up as a maker. I built all of that with like cheap Ryobi, you know, battery powered tools, and just the confidence that that gave me from going from, you know, having made a couple really basic things to building out an entire bedroom. And then my daughter just absolutely like going crazy over it and loving it so much. And it was like a great Christmas present for her. From there, I was just absolutely hooked. And that was the first time I was like, well, maybe this is something that can be a thing that I do instead of just like, oh, I've built a couple things, but now I'm going to go back to, you know, just watching TV all the time.
Yeah. When you were, even back then, when you were thinking that it's a thing you could do, did you see it in the vein of like Ben and Mike, where it's the money comes in around the content creation, or are you just like, I could just build stuff, sell it? Or were you just like, I just want to do this somehow, make some money from it?
Money wasn't a part of it at all.
Oh, really? Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. It was like a self-fulfillment thing. It was, it really was that having that creative desire and then finally having an outlet for it and just that feeling really good and natural. Not that I was like incredible at it or, you know, was just immediately like picked up tools and was just amazing. Like, you know, it was a mess at first, you know, and there was a lot of mistakes and I didn't really know what I was doing, but still, just going through that process and going from having a pile of lumber and plywood and then turning it into a thing that, you know, someone can use. Like that was powerful. That felt really, really good. And just from there, it was like, well, how do I keep doing that? And, you know, it was like, well, I can keep building the things that I see other people build, or I could, you know, well, now I have these skills that I've developed over several months' time. You know, what can I take from that with no plans at all and make my own?
When did you decide to start recording yourself doing those projects?
I think I started thinking about it the more I got into it, but not really seriously until, they launched the, Modern Maker podcast. And, when they launched that, like I was really into, Ben and Mike. I watched all their stuff, but I didn't know who Chris Salamone was. I'd never heard of him, you know? And they kind of hyped the podcast. I'm like, oh, I got to check out this Four Eyes Furniture guy. So I started watching his stuff and then they launched the podcast. And a lot of the early episodes kind of went over, you know, how they got into it, how they got into content creation and making videos. And that really, really got the wheels spinning. And I don't know how long after I started listening. But it was the summer of 2017 when I was like, okay, I'm doing this. You know, I actually started telling people out loud, like, hey, I'm going to start a YouTube channel. I even went on there. I had already kind of figured out the name for it. got on YouTube and kind of secured that name. And then I basically, like, the roadmap that they laid out for how to start a YouTube channel, I followed it almost to the letter. You know, I'm going to build 4 projects and film them all and not release any of them until I have them all done. Then I'm going to try to release a project every week. Although that quickly went by the wayside because it's hard to do.
Yeah.
Especially when you have a full-time job at the same time.
Right. Right.
But yeah, you know, and it was ugly for quite a while at first. You know, nobody, that's kind of the thing when you launch a YouTube channel, nobody watches your stuff, you know, no matter. For most of us, like, there's some people that come out the gates and have a lot of success. But I'd say the majority of people, like, you put a lot of time and effort and energy into something and you feel good about it and you're proud of it and you upload it and you're like, oh my God, what's going to happen? And then nothing happens, you know?
Right. Right.
And I think it's like how you respond to that, how you deal with that, is kind of indicative of how you're going to continue that and how you're going to grow and how you're going to deal with that in the future.
What was that self-talk like? Because I'm sure there's a ton of folks that if they are wanting to get into the content piece, or there might be in the middle of those videos where you get like 10 people watching, and which is better than the 5 that watched before. Like, what did you tell yourself to keep going? Or were you taking lessons like, all right, this didn't work, or I need to stay the course, or kind of what was that like for you?
I think early on, I knew that I wasn't where I wanted to be. I just didn't know the things that I didn't know. So I just made it a priority back then to try every single day to do something to grow Johnny Builds, no matter what that was. If it was researching editing techniques, if it was watching videos to get ideas, just do something every single day so you always feel like you have a little bit of forward momentum, even if you're not getting any sort of views. And every time you upload something, you know, it's kind of a kick in the butt. And, you know, you expect like, oh, this is going to be the one. This is going to be the one where I'm going to explode and everybody's going to know who I am. And then it repeatedly doesn't happen. And I think that's kind of like my philosophy in life. And kind of the things that I enjoy doing outside of making, like, I think a lot of it is based, not to get too philosophical here, but a lot of what you're going to be successful at is based on desire. How bad do you want it? How much do you desire that thing? Because when you really, really, truly desire something, you're going to be willing to suffer to get it and put yourself through, you know, the disappointment of uploading a video and, you know, after 2 weeks, there's only 50 views, you know, that stinks. And then you start to figure out ways. If I do this thing, if I make a better thumbnail, if I pick a better project, if I write an instructable, if I put it on Reddit, if I research how to do SEO, all those little things that kind of go along into growing a channel, you'll do them because you really, really want it, instead of just kind of throwing the towel or just kind of do it halfway.
Were there, on the building side of things, were there things that helped you kind of close the gap between like what you wanted to do versus, like, I guess the skills that you had? Like, were there either classes you took or people that you met on the strict like project side of things that kind of helped you move quick?
You know, I'll tell you that no classes, but I think the thing that helped me the most is one specific person that I'm going to shout out here, and that's Mike Clifford, Modestrial Maker.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people in the space know him because he's better than anyone I know at kind of reaching out to brand new makers that he sees something in. And he did that with me when I was, I think at the time he had like 50 or 60,000 subscribers. And, you know, to me, that was like, wow, you know, that's crazy. You know, it still is. That's a great number. You know, that's a great channel. But to be at like 200-300 subscribers and have someone reach out to you when they're at 50 or 60,000, like that was huge. So all the suggestions that he gave me, because he genuinely wanted to help me, like I took them all to heart. And that's where I'm like, okay, I've got to write instructables. You know, that's huge. Those are, if you write an instructable and do a really good job, instructables are really good about like promoting your article. And those are often when you get those views, you may not get like, you know, thousands of views like you would if a Reddit post pops off. But those are usually really quality views. You know, they're the people that are getting on there and watching, you know, the majority of your video, which is what YouTube wants to happen.
Yeah.
So, he was massively instrumental in kind of my philosophy, and I honestly believe he was instrumental in my growth, because the things that I learned from talking to him, you know, they were just huge.
And looking at your guys' projects, like I almost, when I think of you two, you are definitely different, but I definitely think of you kind of in the same, not category, but kind of the same almost class. Like I hear, especially with like the Making It guys, they talk about the classes of like people, especially on YouTube. And so like, I always feel like I put you guys in kind of that third tier. So after, after like Bob and Jimmy, and then you've got, Four Eyes. And it's like, oh yeah. And then you've got guys coming up real quick too. So, but both of your guys' projects are crazy. They're really cool.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. His stuff is great. Like I got to give him a plug. Like if you guys haven't seen Modestrial, you got to go check it out. Cause he's very design focused, super smart dude with great design ideas, and not afraid to kind of experiment and try something new. So, and he's a good example, you know, because I feel like a lot of what we're talking about is like, you know, starting a channel, growing a channel. He's a good one to look at. If you're starting out a channel and you want to see how to be successful, it's not about putting out a project a week. It's about putting out high quality content that's well done in a smart way, and then doing all the work that it takes. So he's a good study of how to do that. So yeah. I definitely recommend his stuff if you're starting out and you want to, you know, a template.
I'm trying to remember when I had him on this show. It must have been last year sometime, but that was before the like all the River Table debacle lawsuit stuff. And so I did, he was my first message. I'm like, how is this legit? Because if people don't know, he's a trademark lawyer as well.
Yeah. But
that's cool. So then on so the channel side of things, so you mentioned that there's a point we kind of fell in love with just the whole process. Like you enjoy doing this with your time. And then you said now that, and when you retire, you want this to be your full-time deal. Was there a point for that for you, like a single turning point, or has it kind of been a gradual evolution towards it?
I you know, early on, I knew that was kind of the aspirational thing that I wanted, was to turn this into a career. But you know, when you hit those, you know, larger subscriber milestones and sponsors start showing up, then it's like, oh, okay, this can be a career, you know? Mm-hmm. And you know, I think I'm fortunate in the fact that I do have another 3 years to go, because there's no pressure. I don't to rely on this as a means of income. I'm not building commission pieces so I can feed myself or my family. It's, you know, I get to kind of slow play it and kind of pick and choose what I want to do, and try to do it in what I think is, you know, the most efficient and smartest way possible. I feel lucky in that regard.
Yeah. Is there like a milestone you're trying to hit with your business to be able to make the switch? Like if you could retire tomorrow, like, would you feel comfortable going full out Johnny Builds?
Comfortable, yes. Scared, yes. Nervous, okay, yeah. Yes. But yeah, I think I can make it work. Because again, you know, I really want it, and you see other people go full time and then they just kind of blossom. And I think that's because you get to pour all of your time and energy into, you know, your channel, into creating content. And I'm not saying that that would just magically happen to me, but right. I feel like having that focus and that extra time would be huge, and it would make me feel okay about whatever happened. You know, gotcha. If I was able to commit to, you know, doing Johnny Builds full time, regardless of how much money I'm making, that's going to be fulfilling in and of itself. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I think I could make enough of a living wage where I wouldn't, you know, be destitute. And I would, you know, just be excited, I think.
Do you have some favorite projects
so far? Oh, yeah.
Or ones that stand out? I'm sure a lot of them are, but.
Yeah, you know, the one I just finished, I'm pretty happy with. That video will be going up here in a couple of days, whenever I get approval from the sponsor. And I redid my living room. You know, I bought this house in 2008 and I loved it. Like, it was in a brand new neighborhood. It was a brand new build. It was way nicer than the other houses I was looking at in my price range. It was actually a little bit more expensive than what I initially got qualified for. But when I found it, I was like, I got to have this house. But the one thing that stood out about it was how funky the living room was. Yeah. Like the fireplace, the firebox, like jutted out from like the main living room wall, 2 feet. It had these really ugly 12 by 12 tiles that didn't match anything in the house that wrapped all the way around the firebox. And then it had this really, it was like really tall, but not super wide, mantle, but it was placed really high to where you,
okay.
Like, you know, I'm 6'1" and I can't see the top of this mantle.
Gotcha. It's like a giant's house. Yeah.
Yeah. And I had a TV up there, and there's so little room that the top of the TV was like touching the ceiling.
That's crazy.
It was awful. So I've had it in my head long before I was a maker that I really wanted to redo my living room, and now it's done. So
gotcha.
That'll be two videos. The steel wrap fireplace and live edge mantle. That's basically like a big floating shelf. And then last year I had to replace a long section of my my fence. And so when I did it, I just saved all those old gray fence pickets. You know,
oh,
it's just,
cool.
Just pine fence, nothing special. But, you know, when it weathers, it looks kind of cool.
It does look cool, yeah.
I saved all that and like ripped every plank off and cut them down and stickered them, you know, so they would dry properly. And now that is my living room wall. I skip planed them, I ripped them and whitewashed them and made a shiplap reclaimed wood wall.
That's cool.
Looks great. So that feels really good. I feel like I've reclaimed my living room, and it kind of opens up other projects that I can do with that as a backdrop. Like, I want to make a couch. Another one that sticks out is I love welding. I'm not a great welder, but I really enjoy the process. And I built this media console for some friends of mine, and it was by far the most ambitious welding project that I've tackled. And I had this idea. Like, I told them, I'm like, if I'm going to do this for you, I'm not going to charge you any money. You pay for the materials. Like, I don't want any labor costs, but you have to give me, like, you know, basically like creative license to kind of do what I want. You know, here's the basic shape of what you want, and then let me do whatever I want. So, the doors are, you know, they're like steel tube with, expanded steel mesh backer. And then I took, I believe it was 1/4-inch steel rod, and made like a little steel bending jig, and made the pattern of a tree, and, each door is 1/2 of the tree.
Oh, cool.
And that was one of those projects that, you know, when I started, I'm like, I don't know if I can pull this off or if it's going to look good or be straight. But I remember specifically like finishing that and like stepping back in my shop going, holy crap, that's really cool, you know?
Yeah.
And I really, really enjoyed that build. And then a couple of days later, I had to give it away, and I've only seen it once since. The bicycle cabinet that you were talking about, I love that thing. That was, I just think it's super cool. And it's one of the cool projects that I actually get to keep. So
yeah. Yeah. All right. So I want to get to the tree TV stand, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll make sure to include a link in the show notes. How long had you been welding before that?
Oh, I don't know.
Or doing like metal stuff in general.
Not super long. My very first video was a welding project.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. But it was one of those things where, I wasn't like the design of the base was done by someone else. And then I took that design and just basically put like a plywood tabletop on it. Okay. And a lot of the welding was, it was the first welding I'd ever done. And, my friend kind of held my hand along the way. So it didn't really feel like it was mine, you know, right. It didn't feel like the first real welding project that I did on my own in my shop with my own welder was a set of, stools that locked together with some magnets to create like a little table when you're not using the stools. I did, some stained Shosugibon, seats for them.
So just black on black.
The stools are black, and then I use three different colors on the. I use the stain to make like purple, but still dark. And yeah.
That's cool. Is that a video as well?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I must have just missed over that one. I'll make sure.
Yeah. Nobody watched it, so it's fine.
No, I mean, I feel like I went through all of your stuff earlier, but I guess I'm just not remembering that one for some reason. The welding stuff. That tree console is super cool. I was at Spring Make over the weekend with Lincoln Electric.
That's right.
And so that was my very first time really being around anything metal. So super intimidated because people are just hammering on stuff. But it was my first time welding. And I was like, man, this is so much faster than cutting and gluing. I'm like, this is done in like 2 seconds. I just need to wait for it to not be super hot. But how do you go about designing? Like, so taking the tree as an example, did you have the kind of the full design when you went into the build process?
Yeah, mostly. So there's a business here in Oklahoma City that I work with quite a bit, called Vintage Reclaim Lumber. And they do a lot of like custom builds for folks. A lot of times using, you know, reclaimed, cargo flooring from old semi trucks and boxcar from trains and that kind of stuff. And so that console was similar to some of the ones I had seen in their showroom, because that was kind of their bread and butter for a while, was building stuff like that. So just,
and it had a tree design on it.
No, nothing like that. No. Just kind of the general shape of
of,
you know, like a media console that's, you know, framed out in angle iron, with, you know, shelves on the side, usually like a cabinet in the center and some sort of reclaimed wood top. And then I kind of took just that general, shape and technique for building it and tried to make it all my own.
Gotcha. When you go about designing a project, is it starting just like sketches on paper? And I know you use SketchUp a good bit, is that right?
Yeah. Usually when I have something in my head, I'm not like, I can't draw for anything. Again, like I always wanted to be creative, but I would never really was. I'm not an artist by any stretch, you know, but I'll sit there and sketch stuff out. Nothing that I would ever want to show anybody.
Okay.
But just to kind of, I think it helps to get something out of your head onto paper, no matter how good or bad you are at drawing, to kind of get a sense of proportion and, you know, how this is going to interact with this. And then I would usually take that once I kind of had developed the idea a little bit more, and then jump into SketchUp. Because I'm not that great at SketchUp, and I don't like getting in there spending, you know, several hours putting something together only to not have it be my final design. So usually when I get in SketchUp, I really know what I'm going to do. And it's just like the kind of the final sketch.
Got it.
Yeah.
Do you iterate a good bit? Like we go through a bunch of different designs?
Some, yes, some not. Like take the Scorpion hatchet, for example. That was initially a spoon, a carved spoon with an epoxy kind of secret wood handle.
Okay.
And then
way
I was
different.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew I wanted to kind of combine resin and wood and make something interesting and useful. And I thought about doing some spoons. I've actually have a spoon carving video on my channel when I was, from a while back. And so then I decided, well, man, it'd be really cool to cast like a Black Widow in resin, and kind of make it like, give it a little something extra. So then I thought about doing that in the spoons. And then that idea became, well, I should make like a wooden knife and do it. And then I was like, well, no, I should like buy a knife blank and grind it and kind of do that and just make like some scales for it with some sort of cast resin. And then when I started researching that, I'm on Amazon and I'm looking at like knife blanks and stuff. And I came across, the hatchet that I ended up buying. And, that's like that whole idea, you know, it was the same kind of concept, but by the time that I actually built it, it was something completely different, with different intent. You know, I actually bought the Black Widow and it showed up and it was, you know, this little tiny, tiny Black Widow. I was like, well, this is way too small. You know, there's no way it'll show up. You know, I thought it'd be super cool because I had actually had Black Widows in my garage before. And the one I remember in particular was like a monster. The thing was like the size of my thumb.
Good gosh.
And you could, the hourglass on its belly was like bright red. Like it was crazy looking, a little scary.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Imagining something like that, and it showed up and it was itty bitty. So I got back on there and I found that Scorpion and I'm like, oh, it's perfect. So
yeah. So when you were, it's almost like you were kind of one upping your ideas. Like, were you thinking like, I need to have something that can really pop for a project video? Or was it a little bit like, I just want to build the craziest thing or the coolest thing that I can think of?
You know, you can't help but think in terms of like, oh, this could be something that kind of really pops off. But I try not to let that be the thing that guides me. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Yeah, yeah.
I like building that was super fun. Like I really, really enjoyed the process because I didn't know if I could pull it off or how it was going to go. And I kind of like diving into stuff like that where I'm like, I don't know, this could be awful. Yeah. We'll see what happens, you know, but I think I can come out the other side with something kind of interesting. It wasn't until I was done with it and I was like, and I put the video together and that's when I had high hopes for it. But initially I was like, this might be something that does well, but I've been having success with resin projects at that point. So I kind of had an expectation like, oh, this will at least fall in line with some of my, you know, other resin projects that are, you know, getting tens of thousands of views and this should at least do that. And the sponsor will be happy.
Yeah. And that's definitely not to say like going after a crazier project is bad. Like I feel like my wife will ask me to build something and I'm always like, how can I make this like cooler just to keep it interesting for me? Cause I don't want to build just another cabinet, but then to make it crazy. So to talk about that, cause that's your, she said you're releasing a new video in a couple days, but the Scorpion, hatchet, what is the name? What do you call it?
Scorpion Axe. I think that the title is, I can't even remember, something like cheap Amazon axe modification with real scorpion, I think.
Yeah, which that's a great name. I'm looking at it now and you have like the scorpion emoji in it too, which is So it sounds like you didn't expect it to go super crazy. Did it start taking off immediately?
No, No. Okay. So I had high hopes for it. When I was done with the video, I was really, really happy with the video. And I thought it had that kind of extra thing that a video that can kind of do well for you has. But I'm like, you know, maybe this will be another million view video. That would be really cool. But after a week, it had like, I don't know, like, I think 16,000 views. And I'm like, you know, that's not a bad week. It should hit my sponsor numbers. You know, I'm okay with it. And I was actually in Atlanta at the Home Depot event with a bunch of other makers. And so we were talking about that and some other projects. So as it starts like kind of having these like crazy spikes, you know, like all of a sudden it's like, oh, look, it's doing 4,000 views per hour. This is nuts. You know, I'm kind of like getting to share that with other people and yeah. And then it just went like, it went insane. At its highest point, it was doing 130,000 views per hour, which is,
Lord.
It's like, I mean, it's stupid. You know, those kind of numbers are insane. But it's weird. It's like, it's an odd video because the last time I looked at the demo on it, only 19% of the views were in the US.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, a lot of the comments are interesting. It's a weird video. Like I don't know if you can ever predict one to do what that one's done. It's odd. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about that. My numbers are way, way smaller than that. And just your normals. Like I had one video that got over 100,000, which is big for me. And so I started to get like a bunch of comments from people that I don't know, or not even in our community. And that's usually when you're getting like all the, like the trolls and all that kind of stuff. But, is it weird dealing with that? Like when you get something kind of going crazy, do you even like worry about like all the feedback and the stuff that people are coming at you with?
So this is the second one that I've had kind of pop off like that. The first one didn't do it that quick, but, at first with the other one, I was kind of in there and defending myself for explaining why I did what I did or correcting people. But after a while, when there's, you know, over 1,000 comments on a video and you can't keep up anymore, like, honestly, I just don't care. You know, I see them and most of them are goofy and don't really deserve a response. And, you know, it gets suggested to a lot of people that aren't really into watching maker videos.
Right.
So I kind of understand that too. So I don't even worry about it. I
that's funny.
Rarely respond. I just kind of let them do their own thing on there and not really worry about it.
Yeah. My favorite comment, just looking through, was someone said, suddenly everyone is an expert on making an axe with a scorpion on their handle. I was like, that's pretty appropriate. So, and that got 2,000 updates. So,
or 2,000 did it really? That's
so
awesome.
Yeah. So I think it's the most liked like comment on there.
That's great.
Those are wild. So with having a successful video at all, and you mentioned you've had a few others, does that influence your future projects? Like, do you want to, because I feel like that kind of acts as a little bit different than maybe your kind of typical build, more like kind of the furniture stuff. Are you like, I should kind of go that route and do crazier builds, or do you still kind of want to stick with your same, what you're doing?
No, I think what I worry about is falling into the trap of being like an epoxy only channel. I definitely don't want to do that. And I love working with epoxy. I really, really enjoy it. I think it's a super interesting material that's unlike most that we work with. That is extremely versatile. I use it in a lot of my projects, but I don't want to be an epoxy only channel. So I try not to fall into that trap of like, there's still a lot of things that I want to make, you know, like the bike cabinet is a great example. You know, that's unlike a lot of things on my channel, but I was super excited to make it. It didn't perform as good as what I thought it might. But at this point, like, I don't even care because I love that thing. And it's a piece of furniture that's very functional and on, you know, like front and center display in my home, right when you walk in. And that's the kind of stuff I want to continue to do, even if it's not, you know, I don't want to only build stuff that I think, oh, this can go viral. You know, I want to build the things that I really enjoy, you know, like the living room. That's not, there's no way that's going to go viral. Right. And I, you know, I'm fine with that. It's something I really wanted to do for a long time. I'm super happy with the way it turned out. And it's something that I get to look at every single day. Whereas, you know, the Scorpion Axe, I'm never going to use that thing, you know?
I'd be afraid to touch it. I could put my hand over the scorpion.
Like it was kind of a goofy build that just kind of satisfied, like,
right,
kind of that maker kid in me, you know, where I just wanted to do something kind of, you know, I wouldn't say it was like directly inspired by Jimmy DiResta, but I think in a way it was, because I've watched a lot of his stuff.
Like the gun guitar and stuff.
Yeah. So after I put that video together and I kind of step back and I watch it, I'm like, oh, that kind of looks like a Jimmy DiResta video, which makes sense because I've watched a lot of his stuff. But, you know, I think because I grew up as a maker on YouTube and a fan of so many different channels that cover so many different techniques, that I'm a fan of different styles and techniques myself. And I always want to stay true to just being a total like generalist and never pigeonhole myself into, I'm only a welder, I'm only a woodworker. I only make, you know, furniture for my house, or I only do shop projects. And it's, I want to do it all, you know? And I think the thing that I've learned along the way is, you know, yeah, it's cool to build a big audience, but you know, that audience doesn't watch all your videos. Yeah. So I'm learning to get away from building things specifically for all of my audience. Now there's a group in there that's going to watch most of what I do. And those are the ones that are like, you know, they're always there. They show up, they're awesome. They comment on my stuff. They're supporters, and that's amazing. And I want to like make those people happy. But the rest of it is, you know, people that maybe see one thing and that's their entry for what I've done, or anyone else. This applies to anyone. And that's great. And I super appreciate the support and then clicking that subscribe button. But I don't feel like I have to always build for those people. You know, I want to build for myself. And I think if I stay true to that and just kind of do the things that make me happy, and then people are going to show up.
Yeah.
No matter what I make, if it's a welding project, or, you know, I've worked with acrylic in the past, or I, you know, put another animal in epoxy, you know, like whatever it is, you know, I hope that it'll find some sort of audience without me having to feel like that I'm pandering directly to my audience, that they'll just kind of go along with my whims.
Is there either a project or a tool or technique that you're excited about right now?
Oh man. I love my new planer.
Oh really? Okay.
Yeah. That's what my favorite. I bought a really nice Grizzly. I pay for it with my own money. A Grizzly 15-inch planer with the helical.
Oh,
like
yeah.
I had the little lunchbox DeWalt, the smaller one.
That's what
forever.
I had, yeah.
And you know what? That thing is great because it's super accessible. You can go to most, you know, big box stores and they're going to have one in stock or something similar. It's not the cheapest tool in the world, but it's a pretty accessible tool and it gets the job done. But when you're trying to, you know, plane down, you know, a 7-foot long hardwood reclaimed wood barnwood board for a 7-foot long table using one of those, it's kind of a nightmare.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, that the reclaim, you know, wood wall I just did, that was 120 fence planks.
Jeez.
That I had to skip plane and then flip over and then plane to their final thickness. And it honestly was kind of easy, you know, and it was an enjoyable process. That's not like a very loud something about the helical head. They're not near as loud as the, you know, the straight blade.
Yeah.
Planers. And it's just an absolute dream to use. Like I actually enjoy planing things. Whereas before I was like, oh God, you know, I got to whip this thing out.
I am not excited when I have to get that thing out. I'm happy I have it, but yeah, it's so loud and messy to play with, but
yeah.
Well, cool, man. Well, I appreciate your time. I don't want to take a ton more. And thank you so much for chatting with us about your journey, which sounds like it's just getting started. It is wild. You've only been, I guess, on YouTube at least for about a year, which is pretty crazy. So excited to see all the stuff you've got coming in the future.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed it.
What is up? Thanks for hanging around to the end of the show. This is where I give you a quick update about the things I've got going on inside of my shop. It has been pretty busy here recently. And drum roll, please, the thing I've been talking about for months now is actually finally done. The Play Kitchen that has been the longest project, I think, ever, just in terms of the amount of months that it has spanned, maybe not the amount of time I've spent on it. But it is done. It is actually sitting right next to me in our little dining room, and I have the video out. So I encourage you guys to check that out. There's a link in the show notes, or if you just go over to Make or Break Shop on YouTube, it'd be fun. It was this is kind of the second part of the build, so I get more into how I made more of the specific kitchen stuff. So the acrylic pretend glass that I engraved to make the oven top, as well as the kitchen sink and the dials / knobs. If you guys have been around for a while, you probably heard me talk about that a ton, but all that stuff is up and it is live. Something else that I am doing as of last week, I'm going to be trying this out for a month. So I'm going to do four of these once a week. I'm calling it the Make or Break Showcase. If you are a longtime listener of the show, you probably know I did these as a weekend episode. I would not only bring on a specific maker, but the focus of the show would be a very specific project. So I would bring people on to talk about something really cool they made, not just their journey overall. And what I've done now, instead of making this a podcast, I wanted to do it in a video form. So David Picciuto did a kind of like a maker update, a weekly maker update a while back. He brought it back for a little bit, but he was really going at it a few years ago. And instead of doing it on YouTube, what I'm trying is Instagram TV. So I was at Spring Make. And I was listening to Brad Rodriguez talk about Instagram, especially in IGTV, and how that growth is really starting to take off because they're starting to push those videos into your normal Instagram feed. So I thought, since it's not really a crowded space, and kind of what I'm doing on YouTube is a little bit different than what I'm trying to do on Instagram, I decided to put it there. So it's probably going to be on Fridays or Saturdays. I actually haven't landed on a specific date, but I have one episode out. If you go to my IGTV, or if you just look through my feed on Instagram, you'll see it. And I'll include a link, I think, directly to it in the show notes. But it is three projects from the week, as well as a few of the things I've been working on, highlighting different makers. So every week I talk about, if you've got something cool you're working on, make sure and tag me. This is the reason, because I do actually want to feature your project, and I'm going to be doing this on a weekly basis. It may be more than three, might be less than three in the future. Don't know, just figuring it out. So watch it. Let me know what you think. Especially let me know if you're like, I really still would rather this be in kind of the wide format on YouTube. It makes more sense. Please put it there. That's good to know, because kind of the way I'm editing it, I could shoot it for both formats, just making sure I'm standing in the middle. So both wide and tall, the kind of the crazy IGTV one. And then in my shop, now that the kitchen is out of it, I'm going to be doing a quick cleanup, because I've got stuff all over the place. And then I think I mentioned it last week, but I've gotten a pretty cheap CNC. It's kind of a kit build that I got from GearBest. They randomly reached out. They're a company over in China. You can get some stuff real cheap. They're really popular, especially in the 3D printing community. The CR10 is a great one that a lot of people buy from GearBest. But I'm going to be putting it together, doing a quick review, and doing a few test cuts, kind of comparing it against my bigger CNC, the X-Carve. And so if you're interested in one that's only a few $100 versus getting closer to $1,000, this potentially could be a good option. I don't know yet, but that hopefully will be, I'll build it this week and I'll shoot it, and then I'll be out next week. As of right now, I know I promised this in the future, but I'm trying to do a weekly video. And to give you a preview of the next couple projects after this, one I've talked about last year And it was a swing that I wanted to turn into an X-wing for my daughter, which I think would be really fun. And then I have gotten super down a rabbit hole on making foam props. And so watching videos and all that, especially there was this a really cool series, and I'll go into it more later, on how to make a massive T-Rex size foam head that you coat in silicone, that you paint. I mean, it looks like a for real prop. I'm watching it from folks that do this from the movies. And so I want to do something similar. If you didn't know, I've actually written a few kids' books that had dinosaurs in them. And I want to take kind of the main character and create a bust of him and put him inside of my shop on the wall. But I want to get into like foam sculpting, painting, all that kind of stuff. I think it's really interesting. It's a crazy project, but I think it could be incorporated in some cool ways in the future. So that's what I've got going on. Like I said, I'd love to know what you are working on. Hit me up over on Instagram at the Make or Break Shop. I'd love to feature you on the Make or Break Showcase in the future. So until next time, go make or break something in your shop. See you guys.